The following podcast is brought to you by Radio Southland and New Zealand On Air. Radio Southland is a community access media station based in Invercargill, New Zealand. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, radiosouthland.org.nz, for our contact details.
Guess what? You're listening to Grinding Gears with Pete.
And Darren.
Right here on Radio South at 96.4 and Coast Access Radio Cavity. Also on iTunes and Spotify, or just stream us on accessmedia.nz. Check out the Facebook page. Just search Grinding Gears. This week, we've got Mideast Diesel, Auckland Traffic Jams, a fair deal for Rivian workers, and Tesla time. Keep listening.
We'll be right back.
You're back on Grinding Gears with Pete.
And Darren.
On Radio South, the 96.4 and Coast Access Radio Capity. It's your grassroots car show. Kicking off this week with all the Mideast diesel that's flooding Europe. I'm still calling a taster of trading without Russia.
Yeah, all refineries in the Middle East are ramping up diesel deliveries to the Europe, giving the continent an early glimpse of how it might fare without supplies from the big Russia. Yeah, about 435,000 barrels of diesel-type fuels are expected to arrive in European ports from the Middle East this month, according to Tanker Tracking and Vortexa Limited data compiled by Bloomberg. That's the highest since at least the start of 2019.
Yeah, well, Europe will ban imports of diesel from Russia starting early February as, of course, punishment for the country's invasion of the Ukraine. Well, it's still a wee while away. The restriction will be felt far sooner in the trading market. Measure will create as big a need for deliveries from elsewhere since Russia has actually long been Europe's top external supplier.
Yeah, Stephen Sawyer, Director of Refining and Industry Consultants, FGE, reckons the Middle East is likely to be a prime supplier this winter and expects European demand to rise year on year by then.
Well, Europe's own diesel supplies may be curbed during routine maintenance work at the region's oil refineries this autumn, which is our spring. There also could be increased burning of fuel for power generation amid soaring prices for natural gas because of these reduced flows from Russia.
Yeah, good old supply and demand, then, eh? Yeah, but back to New Zealand, and right now there are 255 traffic jams around Auckland. And, yeah, surely something can be done. Apparently the transport plan is not anti-car, it's pro-people. Yeah, they say it'll free up roads and those who need them the most. It's not wishful thinking then.
Responses were sceptical, muted and mixed. Last month the Auckland Council released its board strategy to reduce the city's transport emissions by 64% by 2030.
Yeah, too ambitious, too difficult, too short a time, too much intrusion on people's personal choices, too draconian on cars, and too little money on offer were the typical complaints.
Now, only those deeply into the issues were actually excited by the range of protocols and the positive impact they would have. Called All Aboard AOT Aroa. It's called, and its member groups are insightful sources, apparently. Limited experience here and abundant abroad show they can make Auckland a much better place to live and work, with economic and health benefits to boot.
Yeah, promises. So clearly there's a big task ahead to make the public more aware of New Zealand's transport problems and more enthusiastic about the solutions, even if they are, as always, pretty much up there in Auckland.
Local body elections will only make the task harder, and the proposals could easily become a campaign flashpoint and reduce support for the proposals at the new council and local boards. But let's start with some real-ish time data, from last month.
Yeah, well, if you think you can live with that, then consider this relish time data that the Auckland page we're talking. There are 255 traffic jams around the city, and that's a total of 214.6 kilometres of road, which is not free-flowing traffic, and it's actually been impeded.
Yeah, it could be worse. That's only 83% congestion. That's only 5% above the average for the time and day of the week. Oh, and the current congestion level so far this year is running 2% higher than last year. So how bad would that be by 2030?
Yeah, the next data point is there are approximately 540,000 households in Auckland, and adding to that about 1,000 new ones per month. So by 2030, they'll have added another 100,000 households, and that's an increase of 18.5%.
They want to remain highly reliant on cars for getting around the city. Where will they build the roads and places to park the cars to accommodate such an increase in people? Roads are expensive. We reckon too expensive. So how much of a bill are you prepared to pay?
Next data point. Auckland traffic fumes caused an estimated 939 premature deaths in 2016. And that's a figure from the first such scientific modelling of air pollution in New Zealand released last month.
Yeah, well, the estimated toll of premature deaths across the country from traffic fumes that year was 2,247. While actual traffic accidents only caused an additional 327 actual deaths. So total deaths from all sources of air pollution, I suppose, say, were 3,317, of which only two were industrial.
Yeah, the cost to the nation of that pollution was an estimated $15.6 billion in 2016. If we invested a fraction of that each year on more, better and wider transport options, imagine how better off we'd be in economic and personal terms.
Yeah, it's pretty good to bother with these studies in the South, but almost all cities of the world are wrestling with these issues. C40 is a network of some 100 large ones sharing knowledge and experience on how to tackle their climate crisis. Transport is a particular focus for them. That accounts for a third of their emissions. And this is their main and fastest growing source of air pollution. So 36 of them have committed to making a major area of the city zero emissions by 2030. And Auckland is one of them.
Yes. The key goal of Auckland's council transport emissions reduction plan is big. They have to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by more than half by 2030. That's what it will take for transport to play its fair share in meeting our international climate commitments. And we might have to go even harder and faster given the speed with which climate is changing here and around the world.
Well, it does seem to be more partial to frickin' cyclones and the like. The plan is designed to give people more transport options, so they can choose not to use their cars as much. But other big goals, such as reduction in vehicle/kilometres by 50% by 2030, are within our power, apparently. Other cities, such as London and Brussels, have achieved similar goals over similar timeframes.
Yeah, we're lagging very badly, though, because of our high usage of cars and low usage of public transport, walking and cycling, as a recent newsroom analysis showed. But the government has plans to invest more in those non-car modes of transport. But we can catch up with other cities abroad if we appreciate the benefits of doing so and get stuck into the challenge.
Well, such a transport transformation is pro-people, and the summary of the charts of the benefits show and other cities are already achieving them. So, yeah, let's see if Auckland can do it, and maybe some other cities in New Zealand, like Christchurch, Invercargill. But now, we're off to Mexico. As with the new settlement, more Mexican workers at the Rivian plant will get owed overtime pay.
Yeah, Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul on Tuesday announced a settlement with two companies based in China and Florida that allegedly failed to pay overtime wages. It's similar in scope to the agreement that Raoul announced in December involving three companies and lost wages.
Well, as Tuesday's settlement, 59 workers will get $315,000 in overtime wages and penalties. Raoul said in a statement, "Any company doing business in our state must follow Illinois laws that require workers to be fairly paid for the time they work. These settlements should send a message that employers cannot hide behind subcontracts to avoid responsibility for stolen wages, and I appreciate Illinois Department of Labor's collaboration. We're committed to holding businesses, large and small, accountable for violating laws that safeguard workers and support law-abiding businesses in Illinois."
Yeah, sounds like he means it. We should point out that Rivian itself is not involved in the settlement and has not been named as a defendant. A Rivian spokesperson said, "As the Attorney General's office stated in its release, Rivian was not held responsible for the actions of its subcontractors in these lawsuits. This incident happened outside Rivian's direct oversight. In addition to our ethical standards, practices, and policies. We will continue to work to ensure that everyone working inside a Rivian facility is treated respectfully and compensated fairly and appropriately.
Right on. Well, WGLT asked one Alvar Ayala, Chief of the Illinois Attorney General's Workplace Human Rights Bureau, anyway, whether Rivian bears any responsibility for what happened. He reckoned, based on our investigation, we went after the entities we felt we could put the strongest case against. Obviously, any employer is advised to try and hire contractors that will follow the law. So we went after the entities that we felt, based on our investigation, that we could put the best case together for and were responsible for the violations.
Yeah, the Attorney General's office says three companies were allegedly involved in the events leading to Tuesday's settlement. China-based Minow was hired by Rivian to build assembly lines. Minow subcontracted some of that work to Florida-based BIW Automotive Solutions Incorporated, and then BIW then further subcontracted work to Mexico-based SDS. Did you understand all that?
So many subcontractors.
Yeah.
So the 59 workers hired through that elaborate subcontracting arrangement were routinely working 60 to 80 hours a week, according to the General Attorney General. Illinois law requires an overtime premium of 150%, that's time and a half basically to you and me, of regular hourly wages for each hour worked over 40 in a week. And SDS employees did not receive any overtime wages required by this law.
Yeah, SDS and its president, David Semmelweis, paid the employees.
Semmelweis. Yeah.
Well, that's a funny American name anyway, isn't it? Sorry, David.
No, it's a bit more German.
German, you reckon? Oh, Semmelweis.
Semmelweis.
Weissenhausen or something. They'd have to have Hausen on the end of it. Yeah, well, that guy, David, anyway, paid the employees an hourly wage of between $11 and $15 for every hour of work, no matter how many hours they worked given, you know, in the given week. The Attorney General alleged in a complaint filed Tuesday, the SDS also paid a daily fixed sum between $30 and $35 for each day worked, plus free lodging at hotels and apartments near the Rivian plant, according to the complaint.
The 59 workers impacted are separate from the other 54 involved in a December settlement, which led to another $290,000 in back wages and penalties. Nino was a contractor in both cases. Ayala reckoned in a statement, luckily our office was Spanish-speaking attorneys, myself being one of them. Only I'd say there'd be a challenge in building trust and finding workers, but we're able to do that here because we have those resources. It probably also helped that, at the end of the day, these people all work together. When you get a big chunk of money for one set of workers, and if they know the workers on the other side, that helps with their credibility.
Yeah, fair enough. There would be a language issue. So under a consent decree filed Tuesday, Minow has agreed to pay $170,000 in owed overtime wages and penalties. And BIW will pay an additional $145,000. The SDS and Semmelweis have refused to cooperate with the Attorney General's investigation and engaged settlement discussions. The Attorney General said, so they're going to face a new lawsuit relating to this matter.
Yeah, well, investigation was originally prompted by a tip from the IBEW, Local 197 Electricians Union in Bloomington. That union has previously raised concerns about out-of-town and foreign workers at the plant. Well, the investigation was jointly conducted with the Illinois Department of Labor. Well, after all that, there must be time for a song. Spin that record, Tom.
Wasting another
Yeah, Darren.
Right here, right now, on Grinding Gears, Radio South for 96.4 and Coast Access FM in Kapiti. And it's Tesla time again. And guess what? They're suing people some more.
Yeah, in fact, it's the Louisiana Automobile Dealers Association, the LADA. And that's not the LADA, as in like LADA. It's the Louisiana Automotive Dealers Association.
Yeah, not the rusty car brand.
Yeah. But these guys aren't too happy that Tesla is suing them. Tesla is suing the LADA, the Louisiana Motor Vehicle Commission, the LMVC, and several of its board members who are mostly car dealers themselves. And one of them is the former mayor, Keith Hightower, who owns Holmes Honda.
Hightower Honda.
Yeah.
Anyway, LADA president Will Green told NOLA.com that the factual allegations appear baseless and grossly misstate the specific history of the plaintiffs doing business in Louisiana.
Green also said that Tesla's allegations appear to go against years of antitrust in court and constitutional law. He added that rolling back direct car sales prohibition would risk thousands of jobs in the car retail industry.
Yeah, well, according to Green, Louisiana dealerships benefit communities by employing nearly 35,000 folks in good-paying careers spanning sales, service, and management that average over $70,000 in compensation. Out-of-state technology companies don't care about Louisiana's communities. But local dealerships that have operated there for generations actually do.
Yeah, the LMVC chairman and owner of Dixie RV Superstores, Gregory Lala, was also named in the lawsuit. Tesla Rati reached out to both the LADA and the LMVC for comments, and we will update you if we actually hear anything about it. And Tesla Rati has also reached out to Holmes Honda for comment.
Tesla actually reckons it's suing these individuals and organizations to protect Louisiana customers. In the lawsuit, Tesla said that it uncovered communications between LADA and LMVC members, which are evidencing a common purpose to exclude Tesla from operating in Louisiana.
Tesla said, although Louisiana law unconstitutionally prohibits Tesla from selling its vehicles in Louisiana, nothing in Louisiana law prohibits Tesla from leasing its vehicles in Louisiana or providing warranty, repairs, or service for the many Tesla vehicles in Louisiana.
I thought that was one of their bloody sales pitches anyway. We did a while ago, but they were preferring to lease them out, but then you couldn't buy them afterwards.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like there might be some Teslas floating down the old Mississippi if things don't go well there. But it's that time where we too must float away. But leave you with that important message. Don't be a dick. Make it click.
The preceding podcast was brought to you by Radio Southland with the support of New Zealand On Air. Their funding of accessmedia.nz makes these podcasts available. To find similar programs by other stations involved, go online to accessmedia.nz.